Guys.
Have you started?
Oh, no.
Shit.
You have! I can see it! It's a lie!
You didn't get it from the grand gesture she made? Hello.
Hello. Everybody.
Who wants to be a person who is wrong?
That's an IT crowd.
Oh, I recognized it.
So, hello, listener. If you haven't watched IT Crowd, the only takeaway from this podcast, turn off this podcast right now. It's trash. You deserve better. Go watch the IT Crowd. It's so fucking good.
It's on Netflix. They should have watched it by now.
They really should have, but I feel like it's a bit of those, like, one of those underrated shows.
It's 2021. Who hasn't finished the Netflix catalog by now?
Who has finished the Netflix catalog?
The Netflix catalog changes all the time. Hello?
That's true.
I want Netflix to start releasing, like, yearly updates like Spotify does. It's like, you know, like, you watch 90% of Grey's Anatomy. Go get help.
You watched 3,000 hours of The Office on repeat. Are you okay? Here's 9 psychologists we can recommend to you. So welcome to our little kingdom.
Thank you for welcoming me to our little kingdom.
Thank you for welcoming me into your kingdom.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I didn't know we were doing etiquette lessons today. I would have prepared.
It's not actually etiquette lessons. This is more like office quota lessons.
Okay,
all right.
Every episode we have a quota of how many office quotes we need to slip in. It's important.
Most famous writers of fairy tales is a Frenchman by the name of Jean de La Fontaine. He wrote a vast myriad of fairy tales involving typically a pair of animals.
Oh, cute.
Okay. Is there any that we would know as, like, uneducated heathens?
Yeah.
Are you serious? You've never heard of Jean de La Fontaine?
The name sounds vaguely familiar, but, like, I couldn't name you.
Les Fables de La Fontaine is not something you've ever heard of? Really?
No.
No. Okay. So anyways,
perhaps I should find one that is
for reference. The grin that was on his face earlier has been wiped away. We've broken his heart, and it has not been 5 minutes.
I'm actually moderately surprised that you've never heard of this person.
The name sounds super familiar, but, like, if you said Lefebvre, I'm struggling with my French. Lefebvre de Fontaine.
Les Fables de Fontaine.
I mean, I tried to speak French, so that was my first mistake.
Yeah. I never try. I've learned it's better to not try. And that's the lesson I've taken with me from last 23 years. Seriously, kids, it's better to not try.
For reference, I've never passed a French grammar test in my life. I made it all the way to grade 11. Don't know how I did that, but I did. French is something you have or you don't. Don't try and learn it, kids.
Don't try and learn anything. If you don't know how to do something just inherently, you're never gonna learn it, and you're gonna be trash at it.
That's a really terrible.
Obviously, we are joking.
We're joking. It's our own psychological issues. So
yeah,
it's really bad.
Eric has a tutor. His little, like, teacher part has to come out and defend it.
Don't tell me.
Don't worry, guys. I was checking our podcast stats, as I do every day, like a psychopath.
Yeah.
And we've now hit every age group except for 17 and under. So I would like to say there are no children listening to our podcast. There's like 18 to 23, 24 to 30, 30 to 35. Like, we've, like, hit all the way up until like 60 plus.
Who's 60 plus is listening
is listening to it, except for 17 and under. So,
does this mean we can make this, like, PG?
What do you mean PG? We swear on this all the time.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure.
I
was holding back.
No, don't. So, we talked about doing fairy tales again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because we did that once, and we were, like, super horny for fairy tales, and we decided we wanted to do it all
the
time.
I'm about it, but yeah.
So what I have here before me today is 5 beloved fairy tales with dark and disturbing origins.
How much do you want to bet? I'll put money down right now. They're all going to be Brothers Grimm fairy tales.
That's what we did the first time.
Well, no, but just whenever you search dark fairy tales, it's always just Brothers Grimm.
No, so the first time we did this, we actually read a bunch of Brothers Grimm fairy tales. Literally, one of them was about a mouse, a bird, and a sausage.
Oh my god, it was so funny.
And
but we won't recount it on this podcast because we already did a whole thing about it.
Yeah, well, but it's pretty funny. All this to say that the sausage threw himself in a pot to make soup for everyone else, and then he got fucked over.
I mean, he got eaten.
The sausage was like a genuine character who was like trying to provide for his family. It was the funniest part.
Okay, unironically, I have found a Jean de La Fontaine fairy tale.
Okay, go for
it.
So this is The Fox and the Raven. Okay, this is very short.
Okay.
Okay.
This is translated into the English language.
What language?
Is it dubbed or subbed? I just want to know.
You're about to find out. Perched on a lofty oak, Sir Raven held a lunch of cheese.
Me?
Sir Fox, who smelt it in the breeze, thus to the holder spoke, "Ha! How do you, Sir Raven? Well, your coat, sir, is a brave one. So black and glossy, on my word, sir. With voice to match, you were a bird, sir. Well fit to be the phoenix of these days." Sir Raven, overset with praise, must show how musical his croak. Down fell the luncheon from the oak, which, snatching up, Mr. Fox thus spoke, "The flatterer, my good sir, I liveth on his listener, which lesson, if you please, is doubtless worth the cheese." A bit too late, Sir Raven swore, the rogue should never cheat him more. That is the end of the story.
That was really poetical, and I learned a lot.
That, you know, I half mean this is a joke and I half don't. Okay. It's like baby's first Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh my god, that's so true.
Hey, well,
like, no joke,
though. That's Jean de La Fontaine.
Baby's first Poe.
Yeah, you know, it's like, that's the sort that they introduce you to, and they're like, you know, it's like, they can kind of get it. You know, it's rhymes, it's
back
nice.
To this French poet.
"I was awoken by a crow calling 3 times. Caw! Caw! Well, you know what a crow sounds like."
Wow!
I know what that's from. That's from Ocean's 11.
You're so silly. I didn't even, before you got into our French Edgar Allan Poe-ern, I forgot to ask you guys how your weeks were.
Oh,
we usually do an introduction. I like to, babe, how
freaking
is your week?
So wait, I believe the last time I spoke to this audience,
he's got a lot to get off.
Riding a high.
I'm fucked, I won't lie to you.
No, I was riding real high.
No, I'm just saying we're fucked right now.
They don't have to know how fucked I am to tell them.
Well, they do.
That I was riding a high.
You know, comes.
It was a sick time. It was a really cool time. It was all down after that high.
That's true.
You're right. There's no debating that. I entered my magic tournament. I made it to my second day, and my second day simply did not pan out. And I know it. I know it didn't pan out. And I understand it. I feel the grief that I'm supposed to feel.
So I would like to the audience to know this. I've seen Eric sad quite a few times, but him talking about this magic tournament, his arm nearly twitched a couple times, and I'm not sure what that means.
And honestly, I gotta say that for the one time in a long time, the company that I have supported in a way that I have no reason to support, has really come through.
This podcast is going to need a lot of editing.
Yeah.
It is.
You're right. You guys should do that. This is going to be a formal request.
Okay. Request.
You should release the unedited tapes well as like a secondary.
Patreon.
Yeah, no, like make a Patreon and you can just be like, you guys can tell that we edit this if you want to hear how much of a drunken mess we are sometimes.
The thing about Patreon is that it requires paying audiences.
But to be fair, all of the most popular podcasts are effectively just rambling.
That's true.
They're just rambling with a central thesis.
Yeah.
Well, our central thesis is...
We drink and we talk.
That is it.
You know? Like...
I'd accept that doctorate proposal if I ever heard one.
So going back to Baby's First French Poe.
Yeah.
I would like, if you could read the line where he says, and you are a bird, or something of that sort.
Yeah.
I really want to go back to that one.
Yeah. And while Eric's finding that, do you want to tell us how your week was, Cam?
Uneventful when I wanted it to be eventful, and eventful when I wanted it to be uneventful.
Okay, you have to explain a little more.
Okay,
yeah,
so.
Yeah, you should tell the story.
I work with the city. I have a relatively good job up until today, where I was working with the vaccines and distributing them. And every day that I come into work, very energetic and ready to, you know, do whatever needs to be done to help get those needles out. I sit at my desk and I just wait, basically, because everything has already been done. And every day I'm an idiot and I come in either hungover or tired because I stayed up too late the last night. Or
because your friends drag you onto a podcast and make you drink all night.
Yeah, basically. every day I do that. I walk in and I just start hearing the bing, 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 and I'm just running around all day. So I am now moving on to bigger and brighter things, and I'm excited for the trend to continue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's about it.
Babe, what have you found?
I can keep going if you want me to just bare my soul to the, you know,
yeah, I think
the tens
do.
Of
tens of tens,
tens of years,
tens of years.
I think that's I would say you have more than 10, less than 99 viewers.
Certainly,
I think that's
in
a fair assumption.
Tens. It's a good solid number. Tell us about your life, Cam.
I am a person who is an idiot when it comes to romance. I'm not afraid to say that.
Okay.
How so?
Elaborate.
I am someone who is just like, you know, on the like, within a couple hours of meeting someone, I'll either be like, yep, I like you, I will go out with you. Or, you're a cool person, I want to be your friend. Or, I fucking hate you and I don't want to have to talk to you anymore.
That doesn't seem weird. I feel like I'm like that too.
Yeah.
I think I may have got lucky.
Babe, you're so sweet and sappy on Earth. I love you so much. You're so cute. Anyways, all I was saying is that I don't think that's that crazy.
Yeah, I don't think that's... It's normally something I just kind of accept as a fact. But it's been interesting with the pandemic. Because here I am now in one of these states with someone who I have only physically met once in my entire life.
Okay, well, tell us about that.
Probably. Yeah.
Long have you known them? Like,
how long have I known that they existed? How long has the pandemic been going on for?
A year and a half.
Then I've known that they exist for about a year and a half.
Quite a bit.
I've been talking to them seriously for about 2 weeks.
About 2 weeks? Okay.
About 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
A little bit longer.
Okay.
A little bit longer. Sure. I don't know. You don't need to pin a date in it.
Yeah.
And it's just weird. I think it's interesting. You know, because I normally get very involved and I see the people I'm interested in a lot and I kind of, work towards it that way. So it's just very odd and different for me having to take a more leisurely approach, I guess, to it.
Right.
A more relaxed
restrained
approach.
Kind
restrained,
of?
That's
yeah.
a good word for it. So I'm adjusting.
So you've only hung out with her once in the last 2 weeks?
No, I've hung out with her once in the entire time that I've known her, basically.
My goodness.
And it was like...
A long time ago?
Well, it was like, whenever we opened, November?
Oh, my God.
Okay.
Yeah, it was like the last time we were open. Yeah.
So, but now you've been talking to her in like a more serious way in like the last couple weeks?
Yes.
Okay.
Gotcha. A little bit longer. Maybe it's a little longer than a couple weeks,
right,
but we'll
right.
see.
Ballpark.
It's ballpark a couple weeks.
Oh, but like you can't really see her right now.
Not really. I mean, well, she lives on the other end of town from where I live. She's
right.
moving back to, where did you used to live? Sandy Hill.
Downtown.
Yeah, so she's moving back downtown, so
then
we'll be a little bit closer
there.
For when things open up, which will be nice. But yeah, and I was like, I'm not trucking it all the way across to like the west end of the city, and that's definitely not something you probably should be doing.
You don't like her that much, then.
Well, I am willing to skirt the guidelines for two people who live alone.
Wow.
And don't see very many other people or anyone else.
I have
to
say, if you already feel the restriction of not wanting to go over there.
Oh, it's not a question of not wanting to. It's not wanting to be the person to bring it up.
But if you really wanted to, you would.
I don't want to be the person to bring it up.
See, what you did bring it up. That's the thing.
I don't know, Kim. I feel like if you were really feeling it, like if you were like, "This is the girl,"
you
know, like,
simply.
I'm sorry.
I hate to bring it to you, but like
you would,
the fact that
would.
You brought it up at all,
okay,
the distance being an issue.
What I'm going to state for the record is that my concerns are not distance-based, but pandemic-based.
Got you. Okay, that's fair.
Which is fair. You know. It's one thing because I've had my vaccine. If she had the first dose, my concerns would be gone.
Gotcha.
But it's more, I don't want to now potentially be, you know, originally she was living with her family for a little bit. Now she's going back to her, where she lives with roommates.
Right.
And it's just a lot of moving parts.
Great look either, to be honest.
What's not?
Oh, I understand. Okay. I understand it looks like I'm being like, it's too much effort. No, that's not where I'm coming from.
Okay.
It's more just that there's a lot of, like, moving parts, and I don't really know
where.
I'm trying to be responsible, you know? I don't want to be the one guy in vaccine distribution
totally.
Who gets COVID. That's
yeah.
a really bad look.
I feel like I don't know because we obviously didn't have to do it, but like, I definitely feel like dating in the pandemic is like a whole other thing because you're like, wait, should I be safe or should I be romantic? Should I be like,
that's
I like
the
you
thing.
So much, but wait, I don't want to fucking be an idiot who runs around and dates a bunch of people and like gets sick and then is like, why was I an idiot that I went to the hotel with a bunch of people in the pandemic? Like, yeah, you definitely don't want to do that, guys.
Yeah.
We
don't have to date each other. I don't know what time it is.
We did have to date each other in the pandemic after a year and a half of dating already.
Yeah, I was going to say. You guys
it was
right at the right.
Nobody knew where it was going. I don't know.
It was a rough one when we were living together throughout the entire pandemic.
I was going to say, you lived together before even that. For a small period of a month, but still.
No, it's all very casual still.
I've never lived with my girlfriend. That would be nuts. I clearly don't live with her right now.
We're keeping it very cash.
No, there's definitely a separation of church
Nothing,
and state here.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah.
We don't want to be too serious, Ripit.
No, that would be disgusting.
Embarrassing.
I should have brought a fourth drink. We crushed them before we even started this.
I killed the ball.
Oh, okay. Well, we have
a... Oh, my God.
Don't you worry.
They keep pulling alcohol and ice cream out of everywhere.
That's a specialty. Nine million times in this podcast already. It's just that we were watching Ice Cream Crown again. And, like, one of the best episodes is just, like, literally the jokes are just, it's about, like,
being
the
gay
dudes, and it's
and
about
being
disabled. And, like, there's no way that flies, except for that somehow the episode is made that it's, like, the jokes are only ever to laugh at people that are homophobic at
like
all.
Like, the best joke is, oh, if we're talking about who I think we're talking about.
And
yes, he is gay. And
what's
more, he has
been
gay
since
Wham. That is just not about George Michael in the slightest.
Beautiful.
It's pretty fucking funny.
Have you ever watched, I think it's called, like, Toast of Town?
Oh, with...
Toast of London.
Toast of London, there we go.
Well, it's the same guy.
Yeah, it's the same guy.
Oh, my God, he's so funny.
We have attempted watching.
Watched, like, a few episodes.
I think that's one of those shows where it's literally just better to watch highlights than the actual show.
It's not, like, that's fair.
It's because when they're trying to be funny, they're really funny, but when they're trying to, like, advance the plot...
Show that actually came through was the
W1A. Oh my God, it's like a BBC show.
A silly BBC show that is making fun of literally the BBC.
It's like the BBC about someone who works for the BBC, and it's like a joke. It's so funny.
Dude Man, who is the main actor in Downton Abbey, he's the main actor in.
Yeah.
Like Paddington. He's the main actor in a lot of things.
He's a dude. For sure.
He's the guy.
But it's pretty fucking funny, and it's like, it's one of those shows
great.
That
it's
like
really
three
well
seasons,
done.
And each season is like four episodes.
It's pretty funny. They just thoroughly make fun of the BBC, and that's that.
I fucking respect the company that's like, let's finance a show that's literally at our own expense.
There's no incentive for an American to want to push towards American content. America already provides...
It's drowning in American content.
It already provides the basis for cultural content in most regards.
Yes.
That being said, for some reason, and this is not new, which is the weirdest thing.
It's not even new.
It's not new at all.
It's not new. It's not new, and you joke at this, but...
We're just teasing you, because you're
You tease me, but it's... You think it's funny, but it's not.
If you're laughing, you're fucking wrong.
The thing is that these musical artists from countries and regions that have been supporting their own nationalist music development...
Mm-hmm.
Not that America needs more nationalism.
No!
You know, I think his point is going to be...
The thing is that America has plenty of nationalism, and America is so self-concerned in its nationalism that it forgets that other nationalities exist. The Canadian and Australian music industries have boomed.
They're
particularly... The Australian industry.
We're obsessed with Australian music. We listen to so much fucking Australian music in our household.
I'm about...
Like, all jokes aside, we actually
love Australian
music. The Australians
fucking know what's going on.
Today
they have
listened to...
unreal
Boy
music quality.
Perfect. Amazing. We just got a...
Fantastic
quick...
Furniture.
Julia Jackson.
Crowded House.
True. Rolling Blackout, Coastal Fever. Incredible. There's so many good Australian bands right now.
5 Seconds of Summer, who we do not care about,
are
Australian.
They're Australian?
Yes!
Who?
Oh, 5 Seconds of Summer. I didn't know that.
Yes, they are Australian.
See, I barely even remember the names
the
of the artists.
The Australians?
So.
Tame Impala?
Yes!
I guess I just kind of assume that all the music we listen to in Canada is either Canadian or American.
No!
You
know? I know! That's the classic misconception, but for whatever reason, this
little
land down south has it locked down.
That's true.
I thought your point was going to kind of be that, just like, the way that American culture is kind of developed, that no one really gives a shit where you're from. If you're, you know, producing content in America, you're American.
Right.
Oh, I actually don't think that's true at all.
Or maybe it's not, like, the way I'm presenting it, but more in the sense that, like, if they're hearing it, they don't really give a shit.
Right.
You know? There's, like, not that sort of, like, oh, this is an American pop song versus this is an Australian pop song. It's just a pop song.
I do agree with you, Cam, because I think it's just such an oversaturated American market of entertainment that, like, Americans don't feel probably a kind of connection or patriotism with other Americans.
Well,
they're like, this is an American show. Every show's an American show.
Well,
like, that's not exciting.
There's no reason to.
Whereas
I was going
to
say.
Canadians! Like, we're going to get super hyped about when people are Canadian or,
it's
like,
it's exciting.
That's the thing. Like, it's notable when it's a Canadian artist.
Yeah.
But I think it's something interesting is if you look at, like, Americans on TV, there's, like, the specific sect of people who like to watch British TV.
Right.
You know, and they're very like, this is a British show, you know?
I'm not
like, no one who watches Doctor Who is like, this is an American show.
No.
You know, or, well, Big Brother, they have an American version. But, like, there are people who purposely watch the BBC, or it's not BBC, is it?
BBC?
Yeah, it's BBC, the BBC. British? I thought BBC totally. Was better than that, but whatever.
No, it's not.
It's really not. Like, I kind of love the BBC for that, though. They're not this, like, highbrow nonsense.
No,
they're
really not.
I'm so sorry, BBC.
That is a classic misconception.
You are, but you are. Like, you are, but you aren't in, like, a complimentary way, you know? Like, you're not too good for the
in the same way that you misconceive the CBC.
It's the Office, man.
True.
The British Office was the OG. It was, like, a dry, dirty humor of a, like...
Let's talk about the fact that, like, I think the problem with the BBC is that they... No. The problem with the BBC is that they...
Have you ever heard the story of Ricky Gervais?
Babe, let him tell everyone the story of the BBC.
No. He has
to
hear this.
Oh, dear. Oh, my God. Okay, that's actually
it's
really
It's story
funny.
Time.
Go ahead.
Have you ever heard the story of Ricky Gervais applying to the BBC for his version of The Office, which is the original version of The Office to ever exist?
Really?
The
I didn't know.
BBC leadership... saw him in an interview and asked him, is it not implausible that a boss be this incompetent?
Basically, like, explain your Michael character.
Can you please show us how it is that a boss can be as implausibly incompetent as you assume that a boss could be?
Yeah.
Ricky Gervais, in all of his infinite wisdom, said to them, shall we take a walk around the BBC right now?
Oh, no.
Just that as the resounding answer. Let's go look around the BBC and see what the boss
Well, I was going to say, I think my main issue with the BBC is that they just produce so much that they don't really even ever advertise. Not even, like, in Britain.
No, it's true.
That, a lot of the stuff, like, one of my
That's
favorite...
That's a good thing. The crazy thing is that in our own culture, and this is very niche and this is very specific to Canada, but in our own culture, we have great disregard for Canadian-produced sitcoms. It's
true.
Canadian produced
everything.
Media.
I like Canada.
Not helping.
Have you guys seen Working Moms? That shit is good.
It is good.
I have not.
That shit is funny, actually.
Working Moms is great.
On Netflix? Working
did
Moms.
You ever see the magical realism show that CBC did for like one season? It was called like, I think it was called 3 a.m. or something like that.
I don't think so. No.
It was, I actually really loved it. I wouldn't go so far as to say it's great.
But
it was just, I thought it was like really interesting that CBC, I just realized you're wearing a CBC shirt.
Yeah, oh my god, what an act. Look at you, baby.
This was all planned along.
Honestly,
this hasn't been random. Eric's been worming his way towards this conversation.
Ready to talk about the CBC.
Yes. This is my raison d'etre.
Is that French with a Texan?
Yeah, that was super southern French.
French
with
that
forced accent.
That was scary. They made this show, and I think it was called 3 o'clock in the morning. You'll have to look it up, audience, if you
we'll
give a shit
check.
About this.
Yeah.
But it's like, no. Fact check? Come on.
No.
I said what I said. It'll stay in there.
Oh, yeah. There's no fact check.
And it's like, it's magical realism about just like all these people, and they never really expressly state when or what. It's in Toronto, and it's basically these four friends, and there's always just this like dreamlike air to it. It's basically a fever dream, but as a show, and it's a character study of these four characters. And you know, it gets canned after a week, but like,
yes, it does.
Of course it does, you know, because Canadian programming. And then you get that, which is like an interesting show that just they were like, oh, I guess not enough people are watching it, let's cancel it. And then you have the BBC, on the other hand, that takes, have you ever, I think I recommended it to you guys, Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
Yeah. Oh my god!
That's the same actor.
I know, we keep going back to his name, and I keep forgetting his name,
that
and I feel bad.
Yeah.
In case you haven't watched it, audience, it's basically, they I don't know how to describe it without doing it a little bit of injustice. It's basically the Blu-ray extended comedy, or extended director's commentary to a horror show that takes place within a hospital. So it is somehow like Grey's Anatomy, a Stephen King novel, and it is hilarious because
it's great.
It's hilarious because if you have ever even done like an amateur film, it will just blatantly show you everything that is wrong with low budget filmmaking.
Oh no.
And it uses it as like a method of how to tell jokes. The guy from IT Crowd, Moss, he's in it. And I love it because
he's amazing.
The entire joke about his character is that he's just Garth Marenghi's like editor or something.
Yeah.
And he can't act. So he always just says it as if he's lying.
Yeah.
Or, sorry, not lying, but, like, he's just reading off of a straight script, and he's just, like, you know, and he's just there.
Yeah.
And then you have him giving commentary, and he's like, well, you know, and he's just all, you know, renowned and refined, and then you have him actually in the show, and he's just, like, they're jump cutting to him holding the bloody broom to him not having it in his hand. If you haven't watched it, it's all on YouTube. It's free. Honestly, just try it.
It's really good.
And then there's that, which they made and didn't even bother telling anyone about, to the point where they aren't even bothering to take it off of YouTube.
Well, no, but they have no reason to.
I really do enjoy, I enjoy French plays. I think
like
French
you.
Plays are 100%. Molière, underrated.
Dude, I have a question for you.
Molière is underrated.
Yeah,
that's just true.
This
but
is very
I
true.
I have a really important question for
you.
Oh,
dear.
It's very serious.
Oh, all right,
have
I'm ready.
Have you seen / read Waiting for Godot? Because it is every Jeopardy answer.
No, I have not actually.
And it is a French play, and it's brought up
it
in
is?
My existentialism classes all the fucking time.
The beauty of it all is I have not read or
None
seen
of it. Of the plays. I learned about it.
It's
fucking
French.
Jeopardy
it's a play,
answer.
And like yeah, so one of us should have seen it.
It's a play.
It is
it's philosophy.
A Jeopardy clue.
I don't know what this play is about.
It is frequently
it's
a Jeopardy clue.
Supposedly about a guy that's just waiting for someone to come pick him up on the side of the road, and he never comes, right? So it's this like kind of
yeah.
I get that. There's like the existential
kind of
like
just waiting,
yeah, totally.
Seeing
yeah.
what his life is about. And
well,
but Waiting for Godot, it is literally the most fucking referenced thing in Jeopardy. For some reason, it is always
totally.
The answer.
Well, I like that sort of like. A lot of French plays, like classic French plays, are very much these sort of, they're almost like liminal spaces in the sense that they're always like, yeah, they are. They're all about like, they're like the waiting rooms of various people's lives, you know? Like you don't have like Romeo and Juliet as much where it's this like story that spans all of these different locales and different characters and it's all about the spectacle
no,
and stuff.
It's not about that at all.
It's no,
about-
it's...
It's
characters.
About the satirical value of who is participating in the action.
Yeah, all right. I agree with that, too. Like, and I like that. I like that about a lot of these... Like, that sounds like a play I'd watch. I know it sounds like a boring play when you describe it as it's just a dude waiting for another dude.
I don't know why I read it. Like, I'm also coming to this as, like, a jokey
place.
All I
know of French playwright... quality is that they have an abundance of irony.
Ooh.
They are excellent at that particular skill in language.
The French
well,
are
good.
My favorite philosophers to read.
Well, something
well,
interesting
yeah,
to think about.
They're so fucking good at storytelling.
Yeah.
Well, because it's actually entertaining. Because
they're good writers.
I think some
they
of the best philosophy.
Really beautifully.
If anyone doesn't know, I actually did do a philosophy thing. But... a degree, if you must call
JP
it.
JP Sartre is
legendary, and Simone, and like
Simone de Beauvoir.
I don't know.
It's not nothing.
No,
and
not at all. But
no, they're
no, but like
they write well.
All jokes aside, like Man, I've done some German philosophy, and the Germans are smart and interesting, and they have some really
they are
not
facts, witty.
And they are really fucking difficult to read, and you
well,
try to read any German philosophy, and you're like,
they're
what?
They're not witty,
what?
And
like,
they are not smart in the way that the French...
They're smart in a very different way.
They're smart
in
a different
way. You
read
Kant, and it's, like, super mathematical,
yeah.
And, like...
Sure.
Well, you get the same with political philosophers, you know,
totally.
If you look at, like, political scientists, you can guess their, at, like, their nationality by how they write.
You
yeah,
really
but
can.
Who cares? Who cares
Dude,
about that?
Really
the intelligence you can guess by the wit with a word.
Alright.
You gain with someone like Sartre. It's
okay,
just...
well, again, I know I mentioned Wicklow earlier, but, like, Wicklow, like, are we going to talk about that for a little bit? I'm assuming all of us have, you're French, you're in philosophy, I like plays. I'm assuming we all know about this.
Again, one of us should have seen Waiting for Godot. This French philosophy play.
You're right.
That'll be next time.
The title of this episode will be Waiting for Godot. We just like wait 45 minutes and then we bring it up and none of us know anything about it at the end.
No, but we
no,
it
yeah,
was
yeah.
just
yeah.
like,
yeah.
Well,
so
good.
So, talk to us, Cam.
I was going
to
say two things, and I kind of don't necessarily mean them as, like, parallel points, but
say
they kind of line
things.
Up a little bit. Ooh, three? Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think it's interesting as well, because I think it's Molière. A lot of his characters' names have become archetypes
Man.
Within
right.
the French language.
Okay, that's different, though.
Molière
is not Sartre. Molière and Sartre are basically antitheses of each other.
I know, and that's why I have the two kind of, like, they're tangential,
they
but they're
lie.
Related points.
Why?
Yeah.
Molière is the light and aspirational aspects of life, whereas Sartre is very much the downsides.
If you're in a Molière play, there's like a 50-50 chance that you like your life. If you're in a Sartre play, there's a good chance that you can't even kill yourself because you're already dead.
Basically. Unironically, though.
Yeah, I'm not even joking. Like, that, like that's actually kind of a thing. Like, you're...
Sartre definitely has a much more pessimistic view of life than Molière.
Yes.
And Molière reinvigorated French literature in a way that no one possibly could have imagined.
Mm-hmm.
He really did.
No, we're good. I wasn't disagreeing
either.
I'm just waiting for you to say something that I can jump onto, you know? That's
no, that
it's
guy,
boring if I just say yes.
Molière really just created French literature in the sense that that people could relate to. That was the first time that the average proletariat could relate.
Me? Sorry.
Yeah.
I can't.
Well,
I know.
No,
people,
like,
refer to themselves as proletarians, and I think it's
that's
the best
true.
Thing mm-hmm.
That was the first time where the proletariat, like the average Frenchman, could relate to the character of a play.
No, I think that's absolutely fair.
That's why we
I'm gonna
still
make all
study
my bios
that.
The average Frenchman.
Well, I think that's interesting because you see a lot of people in art who they're kind of like their raison d'être, like regardless of like what format they're using or what time period they're in, like they are very notable for one of the main reasons being.
Well, that's why
that,
I still remember, but yeah.
Well, Caravaggio, like. I don't think it's
yeah.
possible for anyone in a modern context
no.
to look at a Caravaggio painting and actually understand what this was like
yeah.
for someone at the time. And, like, I'm not even talking about the actual time period. Just purely, like, to be within these biblical scenes and to be able to look into it as if it's... Because you can look at these. They still, to this day, they look almost like a photo. Just his
yeah.
usage of light is exquisite. But on top of that, there's this sort of... There's a humanity to it. There's this, it doesn't, it transcends the idea of people telling a story to actually make you a part of it.
Eric has
let all of his emotion out and he is just a shell of a man.
He has read too much French existentialism, so I'm gonna put him to bed.
He's had too much French existentialism and not French wine.
I guess so. I don't know what we're drinking. Actually, I think it is French.
No, is it French
wine? We are drinking French wine, as a matter of fact.
All right.
a lot of existentialism, including some of our favorite French existentialists, are kind of modified and dumbed down to be a lot more pessimistic than they actually intended to be.
Oh, I think, baby, have you ever read Voltaire?
Yes.
Because that shit is very pessimistic and it is extremely contextual.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think the contextualization is, like, actually part of it that's missing interpretations. Agree. Like, I think a lot of people read any kind of existentialism, especially if it's, like, broaching on any kind of nihilism, and just basically take it as being, well, life is meaningless and we all should have just died.
I completely agree.
Which is really not the point.
Which is entirely not what Voltaire is saying.
Not really the point.
But
no.
What you kind of interpreted it.
That's the easy way out, right?
Which is like totally. How...
Which is
when
what...
When you read philosophy as a teenager...
Don Quixote is, even.
Mm-hmm. Is that how you're supposed to pronounce it?
One more time for the fans.
I don't know.
No.
French.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just worried that you're
this
right.
This is a Spanish author!
Because I've been pronouncing the X my entire life, and I want to know if I've just been making a fool of myself.
Good Lord, you should not pronounce the X.
Okay, all right. Well, that's what I think.
Christ almighty.
I'm trying to think of, like, a central thesis that we can end on, you know? Sort of like a...
We definitely talked about...
Think of it as a point to end on, and if it's not great, you can edit it out and replace it with something else. Stories are the conduits that we use to explain the world around us, you know? So originally, we explained what we couldn't understand through mythology, and then we began to explain what we could understand through story and science and thought.
Totally.
You know, so while we used to think of these stories as fairy tales, now we think of them as TV shows, as novels, as all sorts of different other vehicles, you know. But just because they aren't fairy tales anymore, does the magic have to die with that moniker?
No, I think that we understand the own narrative that we're living
through
narratives that we absorb.
Absolutely.
You know?
Everything that we sort of, like, process is, like, put through this, like, lens of our own lives. And I think that's beautiful.
Yeah. Do you have any closing thoughts?
Learn about natural history.
Okay, bye.